spear in a loose circle, shrugged his shoulders, and stalked toward Daroga on cat-like feet. He moved swiftly, his spear's tip blurring as he thrust it at the other Marat, but Daroga parried the blow to one side with the thick shaft of the cudgel, then swept it in a short thrust at Atsurak's head. Atsurak avoided the blow and whipped the spear's tip toward Daroga's leg. The Gargant headman dodged, but not quickly enough, and a line of bright scarlet appeared on his thigh. The Marat in the courtyard let out a low murmur. Someone among the herdbane said something in a grinding tongue, and the warriors let out a rough laugh. A low chatter began between the herdbane and wolf present. "Are they betting on the fight?" Amara asked, incredulous. Tarvi nodded. "Yeah, they do that. Daroga won his daughter betting on me." "What? Shh!" Daroga drew back from the exchange with a grimace and glanced down at his leg. He tried to put his weight on it, but faltered, and he had to swing the staff of the cudgel down to help support him. Atsurak smiled at that and spun his spear around again. He began a slow, deliberate stalk toward Daroga, circling the Gargant headman, forcing him to turn to face his enemy, putting pressure on his wounded leg. Daroga's face twisted with a grimace of pain. "Tavi," Amara breathed. "What happens if Daroga loses?" Tavi swallowed, his heart pounding. "Then the one has said that Daroga was wrong, and the rest of the clans follow Atsurak like they would have before." "Oh," Amara breathed. "Can he do it?" 5 silver bulls on Daroga," Tavi responded. "You're on." Atsurak rushed Daroga abruptly. The Gargant headman whipped up his weapon and parried the spear aside, but his return stroke was clumsy and drew him off balance. Atsurak dodged and immediately leapt in again. Once more, Daroga barely deflected the incoming stroke, and this time it cost him his balance. He fell to the stones of the courtyard. Atsurak pressed in for the kill, but Daroga swung the long-handled cudgel at the Horde Master's feet, forcing him to skip back to avoid it. Atsurak scowled and spat some harsh-sounding word, then lifted the spear, circled, and darted in at Daroga with deadly purpose. The Gargant headman had been waiting for Atsurak's charge. With an easy grace, he swept the spear aside with one hand, jabbing the tip into the stone, then gripped the shaft in one huge fist. He drove it back toward Atsurak with almost casual power, the spear's butt striking the Horde Master in the belly and stopping him in his tracks. Daroga jerked the spear from his opponent's grasp. Atsurak backed warily away, sucking for his breath. Daroga stood up with a casual grace. Then he lifted his wounded leg and snapped the haft of the Alaran spear, tossing its bits to one side. "He tricked him," Tavi said gleefully. "Hush," Amara said.
"He's got him now," Bernard said.
Daroga tossed the huge cudgel to one side. It landed on the stones with a dull thump.
"I remember the fox," he said, his voice very quiet.
Then he spread his hands wide, and with that same flat, hard-eyed smile, he came toward the smaller Marat. Atsurak paled but spread his own hands, circling Daroga. He moved abruptly, a darting motion reminiscent of one of the predator birds, leaping and kicking high on Daroga's chest. Daroga took the kick full on, though it stopped him in his tracks and rocked him back a step. But his hands flashed up to Atsurak's ankle and caught his foot before the other could draw it away. Atsurak began to fall, and Daroga's shoulders knotted, his hands twisting. Something in Atsurak's leg broke with an ugly pop. The Horde Master gasped and fell, but kicked with his good leg at Daroga's ankle. The Gargant chief's foot went out from under him and he fell, grappling with his foe. Tavi watched but could see that Atsurak was at a disadvantage too serious to overcome. Overwhelmed by sheer physical power, too hurt to get away, it would only be a matter of time. Daroga's hands lifted and locked around the Horde Master's throat. Atsurak locked his hands onto Daroga's, but Tavi could see that it would be a hopeless effort. Tavi stared, unable to look away, but something drew his attention, a faint motion in the background. He glanced up and saw the Marat all focused on the contest, stepping closer, eyes bright. Hashat was all but panting, her eyes open too wide as she watched Daroga's struggle. Beside Hashat, though, Tavi saw that Skagara, the wolf headman, had taken a step back, behind her vision. He reached a hand back behind him, and Tavi saw one of the wolf warriors touch a stone-tipped arrow into a small clay jar, then pass it to Skagara, together with one of the short Marat bows. Moving quickly, the wolf headman drew the poisoned arrow and lifted the bow. "Daroga!" Tavi shouted. "Look out!" Daroga's head snapped up at Tavi and then over at Skagara. Daroga rolled and wrenched Atzerak's form between himself and the would-be assassin. Tavi saw Atzerak draw the Alaran dagger with its gold hilt from his belt and slash wildly at Daroga's hand. The gargant headman cried out and fell back, and Atzerak rolled free of his grip.
"Kill them!" shouted the Horde Master, his eyes blazing. "Kill them as we did the fox! Kill them all!"
Daroga roared and rose to his feet, charging toward Atzerak. Without a breath of hesitation, Skagara loosed the poisoned arrow. Tavi saw it flicker across the brief distance between them and vanish into Daroga's arm with a meaty crack. The gargant headman went down. Hashat spun, her saber flashing in the sun as she drew it, and cut through Skagara's bow and the wolf headman's throat in the same slash, sending him to the ground in a sudden wash of blood. The courtyard erupted into chaos. The great herdbane birds near Atzerak screamed as he turned to them and flicked a hand at Daroga. They charged the fallen gargant headman. At the same time, Daroga's gargant bellowed and rolled forward to his defense. Outside the walls, what had been hushed silence erupted once more into tumult and cacophony. Hashat's clan charged forward toward the fallen Daroga, and Atzerak's warriors did the same. Fade let out a wail and clutched hard at Tavi's shirt. "The knife!" he heard Amara yell. "Get the dagger!" The cursor started forward, only to be stopped by the sudden press of Marat warriors, spears glittering with the same dark deadliness as the eyes of the herdbanes beside them. The Alaran troops fell into lines, even as Bernard grabbed at his sister's arm and Amara's, and dragged them both back behind the shields of the troops. Fade let out a screech of fear and turned to follow Bernard, mindlessly dragging Tavi along. "Fade!" Tavi protested. "The knife!" screamed Amara. "Without the dagger, it's all for nothing!" Tavi didn't stop to think. He just dropped his weight, lifting his arms up and slipping out of the too big tunic. He rolled to his feet, looking around the courtyard wildly, and then ran toward the downed Atzerak. The Horde Master's warriors now either engaged the Alarans or faced Doroga's furious gargant, and were far too occupied to notice the fleeting form of one rather small boy. Atzerak watched the melee around Doroga's gargant. The great beast had rumbled forward and crouched over Doroga's fallen form, swinging its huge head, clawing, kicking, and bellowing at anyone who came close. Tavi licked his lips and saw Doroga's fallen cudgel. He picked it up, though it was a strain, prepared to give it one good swing at Atzerak's head, grab the knife, and run back to his uncle. Instead, there was a sudden rush of wind that threw up hay. What was hay doing all over the courtyard? And dust, and blinded him, all but throwing him down. Tavi shielded his eyes, looking up to see several men in black tunics and armor, wielding weapons of steel, hovering over the courtyard. One of them had his hand extended toward Atzerak, and must have been controlling the winds that buffeted the courtyard. Another knight heiress swept down and dropped the same innocuous-looking balding man Tavi had seen before onto the stones of the courtyard. The man stepped forward to the blinded Atzerak, and with a casual jerk on the man's hair and a short knife, cut the Horde Master's throat. The Horde Master jerked and twisted wildly, and the dagger flew from his hand, skittering over the stones of the courtyard and landing in a clump of hay not far from Tavi.
"The dagger!" barked the man with the bloodied knife. "Get the dagger!"
Tavi stared at the man standing over Atzerak's jerking, twitching form. He had no doubt that this man would kill him just as quickly. But he also knew that the man was not loyal to the crown, that he had been pursuing Amara and Tavi, and that he had tried to hurt his aunt and uncle. 2 days ago, Tarvi thought, he might have let the man recover the dagger. He might have turned and run. He might have found some place to hide until all of this was over.
2 days ago, Tarvi breathed, I had a lot more sense.
Then he darted forward, seized the dagger where it lay, and began to run.
There! Tarvi heard the man yell. He's got the dagger! Kill that boy!
Chapter 43. Tarvi ran for his life. The courtyard was a mass of confusion and motion, but he knew the one direction he had to go, away from the man who had killed Atzerak. Tarvi spun, dashed around a pair of struggling Marat warriors, and fled toward the other side of the fort. He heard a roar of wind above him, and then a sudden burst of it sent him tumbling along the ground. Tarvi yelped and tried to make sure that he didn't stab himself to death with the knife in his hand, rolling and bumping along the stones of the courtyard. When he came to a stop, he looked up to see a knight heiress in full armor diving toward him, the spear in his hand held extended. Tarvi clawed at his pockets. Even as the knight came on, Tarvi hurled a handful of rock salt he had taken from Bernard Holt's smokehouse at the oncoming knight, and then dove frantically to one side. The knight let out a sudden shout, clawing at the air, but he dropped to the ground, moving too fast, skipped along for a pair of desperate steps, and began to tumble end over end on the unforgiving stones. Tarvi heard one of his limbs hit with a sharp crack of impact, and the knight shrieked. Tarvi regained his feet, looking around him wildly. More knights heiress had risen above the courtyard, looking for him. On the other side of a struggling knot of legionaries, the huge swordsman Tarvi had seen in the stable at Bernard Holt spotted him and came toward him, sword lifting to clean any opposition out of his way. The man who had killed Atzerak was nowhere to be seen. Tarvi ran away from the swordsman and down the length of the stables, toward the center of the fort and the far gate. Surely there would be someone there who wasn't already hips deep in Marat by now, or a safe building that he could hide in. Tarvi reached the end of the stables at the same time a bulky figure, dressed in a half-buckled breastplate and a helmet that hung down over his eyes, plunged out of the doors of the stables, shouting, "I'm coming, I'm coming!" Tarvi slammed into the young man and both went to the ground. The man's shield tumbled away wildly, though he managed to keep a grip on the well-worn handle of a spade. The man pushed his helmet back, then gripped the spade in both hands, raising it. Tarvi shielded his head with his arms.
"Frederick!" he shouted. "Fred, it's me!"
Tarvi lowered the spade and stared.
"Tarvi? You're alive?"
"Not for long," he panted, struggling to his feet. "They're trying to kill me, Fred." Frederick blinked. His helmet fell over his eyes. Tarvi reached up to push it away and saw the next knight heiress swooping down at him as he did. He reached into his pocket for more salt, but in his haste he had turned the pocket inside out when he had drawn out salt before. It had all fallen out as he ran.
"Tarvi," Fred said. "The steadholder says I'm not to take that helmet off.
Look out," Tarvi said, and bulled into his friend, overbalancing the larger boy and taking him down. The knight flashed past, his sword reaching down, and Tarvi felt a sudden hot sting on one arm. Frederick blinked at Tarvi and at the knight flying on past, circling around again.
"Tarvi," he said, stunned, looking at the boy's arm. "He cut you."
Fred looked up at Tarvi, eyes widening.
"They're trying to kill you."
"I can't tell you how glad I am that you're here to tell me that," Tarvi said, wincing at the sudden flash of pain. Blood had stained his shirt, but he could move his arm. "It isn't bad. Help me up." Frederick did, his face showing his fear and confusion.
"Who are they?"
"I don't know," Tarvi said. "But he's coming again." Tarvi turned to duck into the building, only to see at the far end of the stables the unmistakable outline of the swordsman against the doors on the far side, blade in hand.
"Can't get out that way," Tarvi breathed.
He looked back around behind him. The knight heiress had been joined by one of his companions, and they had lined up for another charge. Fred, we need Thumper.
What? But Thumper doesn't know how to fight.
Salt, Fred, we need salt to throw at those windcrafters. A lot of it.
But hurry, Fred!
The Knight's heiress hurtled toward them in a screaming torrent of wind. Tavi gripped at his knife and looked around wildly, but there was no place to run. Frederick stepped forward in front of Tavi, his spade gripped in both hands. He let out a yell that grew into a deep-throated roar and drew back the spade. When he brought it around again, it came straight over his head and down in a great swooshing arc that met the leading knight just before his sword could reach Tavi's friend. The blow crumpled the knight as though he had been made of straw, slapped him out of the air and to the ground in a single, short, violent motion. Tavi had no doubt at all that Frederick had crushed the life from him. Frederick lifted his spade and swung wildly at the next knight as the man swerved to avoid him. Frederick missed, but even as he swung, Tavi saw the light glittering on something shining on the blade of the spade. Hard white lumps. Crystals of salt. The salt swept through the knight heiress's windstream, and the man let out a yelp, tumbling to the ground and rolling with bone-breaking violence into the wall of one of the barracks. Fred stared at the two men, his eyes wide, panting. He turned to Tavi and stammered,
"I already had my spade salted. After I hit that first one, when I was working on that boulder."
He blinked at the spade and then at Tavi.
"Are you all right?"
Tavi swallowed and looked back over his shoulder at the interior of the stable. Inside, someone had leapt out of the shadows at the swordsman. There was a confused blur of outlines, a short cry, and then the swordsman continued toward them. Frederick swallowed, gripping his spade.
"Tavi, what do we do?"
"Give me a minute," Tavi stammered.
"I'm thinking."
Without warning, a Marat warrior hurled himself at Tavi, ploughing into his side and lifting him, carrying him to slam painfully against the wall of the stable. Tavi let out a croaking shout and swung his knife weakly at the Marat warrior, a blood-smeared member of Clan Wolf, but the knife glanced off, barely breaking the Marat's skin. The warrior tore at Tavi with his fangs, drawing back just enough to slam him against the wall once and then again, driving the breath from his lungs and stars into his vision. Fred loomed up behind the warrior, shoved one brawny arm beneath his chin, and wrenched the Marat back from Tavi, hauling the Marat off of his feet and eliciting a strangled scream of protest.
"Tavi!" Fred shouted. "Run!"
Tavi landed on the ground, woozily, and pushed himself to his hands and knees. He looked up to see the swordsman still coming for him and turned, the gold-handled dagger still clutched in his fist, and started moving again, staggering off into the wild melee of the courtyard. Tavi ducked the butt of a legionare's spear, slipped on a wet darkness he did not take the time to look at, and scrambled forward. A bloodied holder Tavi recognized from Rothholt turned toward him and lifted his sword, but recognized Tavi before striking, and yelled something at him through the tumult and din. Wind roared over the courtyard once more, and Tavi looked back to see another knight heiress hovering, eyes searching over the courtyard. His gaze swept to Tavi and stopped. The man's eyes widened, and he dived down toward him. Somewhere close, Tavi heard the scream of a horse, and Tavi turned toward it, his eyes widening. He slipped past a stout old holder, hauling a wounded legionare back out of the main knot of combat in the courtyard's center, to find a knot of horses, riders wielding spear and blade, and forcing their way across the courtyard.
"Hashat!"
Tavi shouted. The Marat's head whipped around, white mane flying, and she flashed Tavi a fierce smile.
"Aleran!" she called, her voice merry.
Her eyes snapped into place above him and she hissed, tightening her legs on the back of her horse. The beast plunged forward, all but bowling Tavi over, then reared. Tavi looked up in time to see the knight heiress that had been coming for him slash at Hashat and miss, only to have the Marat's saber whip across his face. The man shouted, clawing at his eyes, but he managed to thrust himself up higher into the air, bobbing drunkenly away from the courtyard. One of the other warriors spun with one of the heavily curved Marat short bows in his hands and loosed an arrow that felled the knight from the sky.
"Bah!"
Hashat shouted at the archer. The man only grinned at her, drawing another arrow. She lifted the bloodied saber to her teeth and extended a hand to Tavi.
"Up, Aleran!"
Tavi took her hand and was startled by the slender woman's strength. She hauled Tavi up to the light cushion of a saddle the Marat used, wrapped one of his arms around her waist, and shouted to the warriors near her in a tongue he could not understand. Together the horses turned and plunged toward the outer wall, forcing their way through the crowd of screaming beasts and men.
"What is happening?" Tavi shouted. "Your people have been forced back onto their wall," Hashat shouted.
She shrugged, and Tavi saw a number of loops of black cloth over her shoulder, the dark sashes worn by the enemy knights.
"Wolf and Herdbane were closest to the walls. Our people are fighting their way here through them, but it might take time. We are helping your people get onto the wall, or to fall back to the other courtyard."
As Tavi watched, the butt end of a spear scythed through the air and took one of the mounted warriors of the Horse Clan from his saddle, dropping him into a knot of Herdbane warriors. One of them plunged a glass knife into his throat, and then as blood fountained from him, grasped his pale mane and cut it from his head, together with the scalp. Hashat, seeing this, let out a piercing scream of pure rage, her horse rearing and plunging its hooves at the chest of the fallen Herdbane warrior. The man dropped, screaming, one side of his chest warped oddly. One of the other Marat raised his spear, but Hashat lifted a hand, spitting a command. The spearman nodded and whipped the spear down at the Marat, its tip leaving a long cut over the Marat's ribs. He slashed again into an X, and then the horses surged on.
"What was that?" Tavi asked. "He took Ishava's scalp," Hashat snarled. "Attempted to destroy his strength. That is different than killing Aleran."
"Why didn't you kill him?"
"Because we will not lose Ishava's strength. We marked him. After the fight, Aleran, we will partake of that Herdbane and let Ishava rest."
Tavi blinked and stared at Hashat. The horse headman's dark eyes gleamed with something hard and savage, and she only smiled when someone hurled another spear at her, and she had to raise up on her stirrups to cut it out of the air with her saber. They reached the wall, but the press of the combat had forced them to the northwest corner of the courtyard, where part of the wall had collapsed when Doroga's gargant had come charging through it.
"Doroga!" Tavi shouted. "Where is Doroga?"
"Out," Hashat responded. "We got him onto his gargant and sent him back to his people."
She looked around the courtyard and shook her head.
"We cannot remain here long, Aleran. The wolves and Herdbane are being forced inside your walls by our people."
"My friend," Tavi said. "Fred, tall boy carrying a spade. He's back by the stables. You have to help him."
Hashat looked back at Tavi, expression dark, then flashed him a brilliant smile.
"I will help him. Now, Aleran, stand up. Hold on to my shoulders."
Hashat rode close to the crumbled section of the wall and looked up into the sun to see figures moving up there. One of them dropped a rope down. Tavi stood up, his arm throbbing where he had been cut, his feet on the Marat saddle, his hand on Hashat's slender, strong shoulders. He shoved the gold-handled dagger through his belt and grabbed onto the rope. Hashat glanced up at him, then kicked her horse into motion, leaving him swinging in the air, as whoever was up above began pulling the rope up.
"Fade!" Tavi exclaimed.
Fade let out a happy hoot and hauled Tavi up onto the broken section of the wall. The slave's scarred face twisted into a grotesque smile as he grasped Tavi's shoulders and then hurried him up onto the battlements, away from the edge of the broken walls. At the top, Several legionaries crouched upon the battlements, panting and exhausted. None were unwounded. They crouched with their backs against the crenellation, their shields held between them and the courtyard below. Bernard crouched there too, but rose to come to Tavi and clutched at his arm fiercely.
Tavi!
Uncle! Where's Aunt Isana? Bernard shook his head, his face pale.
We got separated.
He took the boy's shoulders and guided him up against the crenellation, pressing him to crouch against the stone and kneeling with his own body between Tavi and the courtyard. Tavi looked out at the battlefield outside the fortress, awed. He had never seen so many people, much less so many people struggling to kill one another. The battlefield outside was as confusing a jumble as the one in the courtyard, but on a far grander scale. Gargants screamed and bellowed in the distance, ploughing a slow but steady path toward the walls, while wheeling groups of mounted horse clan dashed and feinted everywhere, engaging packs of wolf warriors or disorganized bands of herdbane with their uncontrollable warbirds.
"Great furies," Tavi breathed. "Get your head down," Bernard rumbled.
He picked up a heavy legion shield and held it across his body, facing the courtyard.
"Someone still stops to shoot an arrow once in a while."
"What about Aunt Isana?" Bernard grunted as something struck the metal shield with a hollow, heavy thump.
"We're doing all we can, boy. Stay down."
Fade let out an alarmed cry from behind his shield, and Tavi looked back in time to see someone make a running leap from the other side of the gap in the wall. Amara landed on the battlements beside Fade with a rush of wind and a grunt of effort, and wormed her way behind Fade's shield at once, panting. "Tavi," she said, her eyes widening. "I never thought you'd make it out of that.
I had help."
"Do you have it?"
"Yes," Tavi said.
He turned the knife's handle toward her and passed it over. Amara took the dagger, paling, and shook her head. "I have to get this to the First Lord." Bernard grimaced.
"What's Giraldi have to say?"
"We're cut off," Amara said. She wiped sweat from her brow, and Tavi saw that her hand was shaking. "Horse and Gargant are pushing the other Marat into garrison. They hold the west courtyard except for the wall. East courtyard has pulled all its people back into buildings for defense. Giraldi thinks that Doroga's people will drive a wedge between Herdbane and Wolf within the hour, and they'll have to quit the field." Bernard blew out a breath.
"An hour."
Something else slammed against his shield, shoving his shoulder into Tavi's.
"We aren't going to last that long. My sister?"
"She's in one of the barracks in the east courtyard with Graham. Giraldi said that he saw her go in with him."
"Good," Bernard rumbled. "Good."
Down the wall, one of the legionaries cried out. Tavi looked up and saw an arrow protruding from the man's upper shoulder. It didn't look like a life-threatening wound, but within a few seconds the man's head rolled on his neck, and he fell quietly to his side. Bernard grabbed Tavi's arm and crab-walked down the battlements behind his shield, keeping it over both of them. He checked the man's throat and grimaced.
"Must have hit the artery. He's gone."
Then he frowned and leaned closer.
"This isn't a Marat arrow."
The next legionary on the wall abruptly jerked. His head snapped back, where a few scant inches of his helmet showed over his shield. He blinked a few times, and then blood ran down between his eyes and over one temple. His eyes unfocused, and then he toppled to his side as well, the arrow piercing his helmet. Amara dragged Fade down the wall and flicked a glance around his shield. "It's him," she hissed. The third man crouched behind his shield, tucking everything in close, too close. The next arrow slammed into the shield itself, pierced it, and went on into the man's chest at his ribs. He let out a wheezing cry, blood suddenly a froth on his mouth. Tavi stared in horror at the legionaries dying on the wall beside him. It had happened so fast. It hadn't taken half a minute for the unseen archer to kill three men.
"We have to get out of here," the last of the legionaries stammered.
He started to rise.
We can't stay here.
Stay down, you fool,
Bernard shouted. But the Legionare turned to run down the wall toward the rope that lay coiled by the gap. As soon as he rose, he cried out, and Tavi saw a thick black arrow impaling the man's leg. He fell to the ground with a shout, landing on top of his shield. The next arrow struck square against his ear. The man folded quietly down as though going to sleep, and didn't move again.
"Damn you, Fidelius!" Amara shouted, her voice raw.
Tavi looked up and down the wall. Behind him, the battlements abruptly ended at the gap Daroga had crushed into the wall. Before him, the battlements ran steadily along until they reached a wall of solid rock. The builders of Garrison had used the old granite bones of the hills on either side of the fortress to serve as its north and south walls, and they were little more than a sharply sloped face of rock.
"Can we climb that? Can we get out that way?"
"With all those knights, Eris?" Amara shook her head. "We wouldn't stand a chance." The courtyard itself, Tavi could hear, seethed with the cries of Marat and their beasts. The occasional scream of a horse, the snarling of wolves, the whistling shrieks of Herdbane. Even if they did climb down the rope, they would only be falling from the frying pan and into the fire.
"We're trapped," Tavi breathed.
Another arrow slammed into Bernard's shield, its steel tip bursting through the metal lining and wood of the shield, sharp point emerging for the width of several fingers, and barely falling short of his temple. Bernard went white, but his expression didn't change, and he covered himself and Tavi with the shield resolutely. Wind howled at the gap in the wall, and Tavi looked back to see the man who had ordered the knight's heiress earlier being dropped off on the battlements by one of the airborne knights. A moment later, the huge swordsman landed next to him. Amara drew in a breath, her face pale.
"Get away from here, Fidelius!"
The innocuous-looking man regarded those crouching on the walls with a flat, neutral gaze.
"Give me the dagger."
"It isn't yours."
"Give me the dagger, Amara."
For an answer, Amara rose and drew the sword from her side. She took the dagger from her belt and tossed it onto the stones behind her.
"Come take it if you can. I'm surprised you didn't kill everyone while you had the chance."
"I ran out of arrows," the man said. "Aldric, kill them."
The swordsman drew his blade and began walking down the wall. Amara licked her lips and held her guardsman's blade low, parallel to her thigh. Tavi could see her hand trembling. Beside him, he heard his uncle growl. Bernard jerked at the straps of the shield and loosened it from his arm. Then he handed the straps to Tavi and said,
"Hold on to this."
Bernard rose, taking up the double-bitted axe, and moved down the wall to stand beside Amara. Tavi swallowed, staring. Aldric paused several feet away, abruptly becoming absolutely still. Bernard shrugged one of his shoulders and then let out a shout and rolled forward, axe sweeping across his body in a vicious arc at the swordsman's head. Aldric ducked beneath the blow, and the axe bit into the stones of one of the merlins, shattering it into flying bits of rock and powder. Bernard spun, using the momentum, and brought the axe sweeping down in a blow meant to split the swordsman's body in two. Aldric waited until the very last second to move, and then hardly seemed to move at all. He twisted his hips to one side, drawing the line of his body away from the descending axe, so that it whipped past his chest by the breadth of a hair. As he did, his sword rose. The tip plunged into Bernard's flank, just above the belt of his trousers. Bernard stiffened, his eyes widening. He let out a short, harsh groan, and his fingers loosened from the handle of the axe. It fell to the battlements with a thump. Tavi stared in horror. Aldric twisted the blade as he tore it back out of Bernard's flank, then casually let him fall from the battlements toward the chaos of the courtyard below.
"Uncle!"
Tavi screamed. Amara reached out a hand toward him as he fell.
"Bernard!"
Fade let out a shriek, dropping his shield, and ran back to Tavi, clutching to the boy and gibbering incoherently.
Aldrich flicked his weapon to one side, and droplets of blood, of his uncle's blood, splattered against the stones of the battlements. Amara's face set in a sudden mask of cold disdain. "Crows take you, Fidelius," she said in a cool, quiet voice. "Crows take you all." Tavi didn't see her strike, so much as he saw a blur of color the same shade as the cloak the cursor wore. She moved toward the swordsman with her guardsman's blade, and the sword made the air whistle as it darted at Aldrich. The swordsman took a pair of quick steps back, no surprise on his face, no emotion. He lifted his blade and caught Amara's blow on it. Three more blows followed, so fast that they chimed in what almost seemed a single tone, but the swordsman stopped them all despite Amara's sheer speed, his blade close to his body, his movements very short, quick. Tavi crawled forward, tears blurring his eyes, lugging the huge shield and the sobbing Fade with him. He recovered the dropped dagger and shoved it through his belt again, watching the battle, helpless and terrified. Amara whirled and crouched and whirled again, her blade whipping at Aldrich's throat, knees and throat again. The swordsman blocked each strike, and then with a sudden hard smile his blade lashed out. Amara hissed, and the sword tumbled from her hands, falling to the stones near Tavi. Aldrich whipped his blade in a horizontal line, and Amara let out a harsh cry, staggering against the battlements, her hair fallen around her face. Tavi could see blood on the mail around her belly. Amara turned toward Aldrich, unsteady on her feet, and swung her arm at him in a strike. The swordsman slapped her hand aside, and his foot lashed out at her knee. Amara gasped and fell to the stone. She struggled to rise again. Aldrich shook his head, as though disgusted, and slammed one heavy boot down onto Amara's splinted arm. She let out a cry and jerked. She looked up at Tavi, her eyes not focused, her face bedsheet white. Aldrich did not pause. He drew back his blade, crouching, and with two hands swung it toward the paralyzed cursor. Tavi didn't stop to think. He seized the fallen sword in his left hand and lunged forward from his knees toward the swordsman. The guardsman's blade flicked out and found the gap between the swordsman's mail and the tops of his boots, drawing an insignificant cut across the skin. But it was enough to make Aldrich divert the blow aimed for Amara's neck, to parry Tavi's clumsy thrust aside. Aldrich snarled, his face suddenly suffused with scarlet anger, making an old scar stand out white against his cheek. He slammed his weapon against Tavi's. Tavi felt the jolt of it in his shoulders and chest, and his arm went numb in a tingling wash of sensation from fingertip to elbow. The sword flew off somewhere behind him. He rolled back and tried to lift the shield to cover himself, but the swordsman kicked it aside, and it tumbled out of Tavi's grasp and into the courtyard below.
"Stupid boy," Aldrich said, eyes closed. "Give me the dagger."
Tavi clutched his hand on the dagger's hilt and started worming his way back along the wall.
"You killed him!" Tavi shouted, his voice hoarse. "You killed my uncle!"
"And what happened to my Odiana is your fault. I should kill you right here," Aldrich growled. "Give up. You can't win."
"Go to the crows. If I don't beat you, someone else will."
"Have it your way," the swordsman said.
He whirled the sword in his fingers and closed toward Tavi, lifting the blade, eyes cold.
"If Araris Valerian himself was here, he couldn't beat me. And you aren't Araris."
The swordsman brought both hands to the hilt of the sword and struck. Tavi saw the cold, bloodied metal of the blade falling toward him and knew that he was about to die. He screamed and lifted a hand, knowing full well that it would do him no good, but he was unable to do anything else. The sword came down in the death stroke, and met steel in a cold, clear chime like a bell. A cloud of silver sparks rained down where Aldrich's blade had met the steel of the guardsman's sword. Fade stood over Tavi, both hands on the hilt of the short blade, his legs spread out wide, knees bent, his body relaxed. The swordsman bore down on his weapon, but Fade seemed able to hold it away from Tavi with little effort, and after a scant pair of heartbeats, Fade twisted his body. Aldrich's blade slid to one side, and he skipped back from a counter-stroke, but not fast enough. Fade's sword whipped toward Aldrich's face, and split the white scar there open anew, blood flowing. Aldrich dropped back into a guard position, watching Fade, his eyes wide, his reddened face going pale.
"No," he said. "No."
Fade took a step forward and stood between Tavi and the other two men on the wall. His voice came out quiet, low, steady.
"Stay behind me, Tavi."
Tavi stared in shock. He clutched the dagger and scooted back from the two men.
"You aren't," Aldrich snarled. "You can't be. You're dead,"
Fade said. "You talk too much."
Then he spun forward, deftly stepping over Amara's unmoving form, his sword gliding toward the swordsman. Aldrich parried in a shower of scarlet sparks, slid a thrust to his belly aside, and cut at the slave's head. Fade dropped to a crouch, and the blow struck cleanly through 2 feet of fury-crafted battlement stone. A chunk of stone the size of a big washtub slid down the wall and fell into the battle outside the fortress. Fade rose, blade dancing, and pressed the swordsman back down the battlements, his ragged and unkempt hair flying about his head, his scarred face set in an expression of cool detachment. When his sword struck Aldrich's, scarlet fire rained down, and when he caught one of the swordsman's strikes, clouds of silver-white motes flew forth in a flash. Tavi saw Aldrich begin to panic, his movements becoming jerkier, faster, less elegant. He retreated step by step, and Fade pressed him relentlessly. The slave swept one blow at Aldrich that missed altogether, throwing up another shower of sparks as the blade cut through the stone near Aldrich's feet. But the slave seemed to recover rapidly, and he began to push Aldrich down the wall once again. Tavi had never seen anything so graceful, so terrifying as the two men clashing together. Though Aldrich was the larger of the pair, Fade seemed more nimble, his movements more fluid, again and again blocking blows that might have killed him to miss by the barest margin. He leapt over one strike, ducked under another, and thrust at Aldrich's belly once more. The swordsman parried him aside, spinning on his feet to reverse positions with Fade on the narrow battlements, so that he now stood with his back to Tavi. Aldrich rained a pair of heavy blows down on Fade, who danced aside from one and slid the other off the guardsman's blade. Fade countered with a volley of cuts and thrusts too swift for Tavi to follow, and Aldrich once again backed down the wall, defending himself. Fade's blade whipped at Aldrich's foot and missed, slashing stone. Aldrich kicked the slave in the face with one heavy boot, and Fade's face snapped to one side. He turned the motion into an upward slash, but that blow too missed Aldrich altogether, instead slashing through the massive Merlin beside him. Aldrich's sword darted down to Fade's wrist, a swift cut that drew blood, and threw the sword from the slave's hands and down into the courtyard below. Fade cried out and fell to his knees, clutching the hand to his chest. Aldrich stood over Fade, panting, white around the eyes, and drew his sword slowly up behind him.
"Over," he said. "Finally, over. You lose."
Fade said, "Look where you're standing." Tavi looked down at Aldrich's feet, at the deep slashes in the battlements where Fade's sword had cut through the stone. Aldrich looked down, and his face went white. The Merlin beside him slid to one side along the upward sweeping line Fade had cut in it, the stone falling with a ponderous grace to the weakened floor of the battlement. It struck, and the 2 slashes Fade had made in the stone became a sudden myriad of crumbling cracks. Aldrich tried to step back, but the stone beneath his feet gave way like a rotten board, and with a howl Aldrich ex gladius and 1,000 pounds of stone went crashing down to the courtyard below. Fade closed his eyes for a moment, panting, then looked up at Tavi. The boy stared at him. How? Fade moved one shoulder in a shrug.
Aldrich has always thought in lines, so I thought in curves.
Tavi saw a movement behind Fade and shouted, Fade, look out! The slave whirled, but not before Fidelius, holding the rope they had used to climb to the wall, had tossed a loop of it over Fade's head. Fidelius jerked on the rope and it tightened. Then the man planted his feet and hauled. Fade struggled, but he had no leverage. The rope hauled him off the battlement. Fidelius let go of the rope, and Fade fell out of sight. The end of the rope had been tied off to one of the crenellations, and the rope tightened with a sudden snapping jerk.
No, Tavi breathed.
Fidelius turned toward Tavi.
No!
The boy rose to his feet and threw himself at the man on the wall, brandishing the dagger. He leapt at Fidelius, knife extended. Fidelius caught Tavi by his shirt, and without any effort spun him around and threw him to the stones of the battlement. Tavi felt the rock hit his back with an impact that stole his breath and turned the steady hot sting of his wounded arm into a raging fire. He let out a weak sound of pain and tried to struggle away from Fidelius, but within a few inches he felt the crumbling edge of the shattered battlement behind him. He looked back and down on a drop into the hard, jagged rubble of the fallen section of wall, where Marat and beasts fought in savage efficiency, killing. He turned back to Fidelius, clutching the dagger.
Give me the knife, Fidelius said, his voice quiet, his eyes dead. Give me the knife, or I'll kill you.
No, Tavi wheezed.
You don't have to die, boy.
Tavi swallowed. He squirmed out as far as he could on the broken battlements and heard the stones begin to crackle and groan beneath him.
Stay away from me!
Fidelius's face twisted in anger and he jerked his hand in a sudden gesture. The stone rippled as if it had been a sheet snapped by a holdwife and threw Tavi a few feet toward Fidelius, stunning the boy. Fidelius reached for the knife. Tavi swept it at him in a desperate cut. Fidelius clutched the boy's throat, and Tavi felt his breath cut off with a sudden jerk.
Just as well, Fidelius said. No witnesses.
Tavi's vision began to dim. He felt his grip on the dagger begin to loosen. Fidelius shook his head, and the pressure on Tavi's throat began to increase.
You should have given me the knife.
Tavi struggled uselessly until his arms and legs seemed to forget how to move. He stared up into Fidelius's hard eyes and felt his body going limp. And so it was that he saw Mara weakly stir and lift her head. He saw her writhe, lifting one knee beneath her and reaching back to draw a short, small knife from her boot. She clenched her jaw and shoved her broken arm beneath her, her forearm across the floor, lifting her body. Then in one motion she drew back the knife and flicked it at Fidelius's back. A sudden jet of wind propelled the knife toward him. Tavi saw the man jerk suddenly, startled surprise on his features. He stiffened, fingers loosening from Tavi's throat, and reached a hand up toward his back, his expression twisting with sudden agony.
"You wanted a knife, Fidelius," Amara hissed. "There's the one I took from you."
Fidelius, his face blank, frightened, turned back to Tavi and clutched at his hand, at the dagger. There was a frantic moment of scrambling and Fidelius let out a gasping cry of pain. Tavi felt a hand around his wrist, a sudden pressure, heard the crack of breaking bones. Agony roared over him and he saw his hand dangle uselessly. Fidelius reached for the dagger and grabbed its hilt. Tavi seized Fidelius's belt and hauled with all of his strength and weight. Fidelius overbalanced, let out a harsh croak, and fell from the battlements to the sharp-edged rubble of the gap in the wall. Tavi turned and looked down, saw the man land on the stones with his feet under him. Tavi thought he heard bones break.
Fidelius fell to the ground, and a tide of Marat washed over him. Tavi stared, panting, exhausted, in more pain than he thought could exist in the entire world. Uncle Bernard, Fade. The tears welled up and he couldn't stop them, couldn't stop himself from sobbing, letting out ugly, harsh little sounds. He laid his cheek down on the stone and cried. He felt Amara crawl to him a few moments later. The cursor dragged a shield with her. She lay down beside Tavi and used the shield to cover them both. He couldn't stop sobbing. He felt her hand pat clumsily at his back.
"It's all right, Tavi. It's all right."
She leaned her cheek against his hair.
"Shh. You're going to be all right. It's over.
Over." Tavi cried quietly until the darkness swallowed him. Chapter 44. Isana watched the battle on the shattered battlements with her heart in her teeth, trapped on the second floor of a barracks building in the east courtyard and helpless to do anything to influence its outcome. She saw her brother fall from the walls, and through a haze of tears saw the cursor drop to the battlements as well. She screamed when Tavi took up the fallen sword and faced the enormous swordsman, and again when Fade took up the old weapon and fought the man up and down the battlements. She watched, careless of the occasional buzz of a flying arrow, as Fade was hanged and thrown off the walls, as Tavi fought for the dagger, and as the traitor cursor fell from sight. She watched as Tavi collapsed, and as the wounded Amara dragged her shield over both of them, then went still.
"Tavi," she heard herself say. "Tavi, no! Oh, furies!"
She turned and ran out of the room, down the stairs to the first level of the barracks, a common room for the soldiers living there. Heavy iron shutters had been closed over the window, but the iron bars that could be fastened shut over the door had been torn away from their hinges only moments before, along with the heavy wooden door, and now the doorway had been blocked with a pair of heavy tables, leaving the upper half of the doorway open. Frederick stood in the doorway, a legion shield strapped onto his left arm, his dented spade clutched in his right hand. One of the women of garrison stood with him, a stout, stern-looking matron with bare feet and a bloodied spear gripped in her hands. The young Gargant herder's hair hung around his face, damp with sweat, and he bore a cut that would leave a long white scar leading from his jawline to his ear, but his eyes were determined, hard. As Isana came down the stairs, another Marat threw himself at the barricade, stone-headed hatchets in either hand. The Marat swung the first at Frederick, but the herder lifted his shield and the head of the hatchet shattered upon it. The woman standing with him drove her spear viciously into the Marat's thigh, and the warrior dropped his second hatchet in a blow aimed at the spear's haft. Frederick shouted and thrust his spade at the Marat, the steel blade of the tool gouging roughly into the Marat's chest. Frederick jerked the spade back to him and with a roar leaned back and kicked the stunned Marat in the belly. The warrior went flying away from the fury-assisted blow, landing in a heap upon the stones of the embattled courtyard. Isana rushed to the doorway.
"Frederick, I've seen Tavi and Bernard. They're hurt and I've got to help them."
Frederick turned to her, panting, his handsome face speckled with droplets of blood.
"But Mistress Isana, there's Marat running around everywhere out there.
And they're lying wounded in it. I need you to help me carry them out of the fight."
The woman with the spear nodded to Isana.
"Go on. We can hold the door for a while."
Frederick frowned, his expression torn.
"You sure?"
"Thank you,"
Isana said and clasped the woman's arm. Then she grabbed Frederick's.
"They're near the gate on the broken section of wall."
Frederick swallowed and nodded.
"So we just go to the other courtyard, right?"
"Yes."
Frederick settled his grip on his spade's handle and nodded.
"All right, then."
Isana clutched tightly to Frederick's shoulder as he leaned forward, took a quick look around the courtyard and padded swiftly toward the other side of garrison, keeping near to the wall. The carnage in the courtyard was like some kind of nightmarish slaughterhouse.
The Marat roamed everywhere, attacking buildings, fighting with one another and with the Alaran defenders. A shrill scream cut across the courtyard, terror-filled. In the doorway of the barracks building across the courtyard from them, a pair of herdbanes appeared. They dragged a wounded legionare out into the courtyard, one on either arm, and tossed him to the ground between them. Even as Asana watched, the legionare's helmet tumbled off, revealing Warner's bald head and exhausted face beneath.
"Warner!"
Asana cried. Warner looked up, his face ashen, and tried to sweep his sword at the nearest bird, but the movement was listless, as though he barely had the strength to move. The terrible birds began to wrench the steadholder apart, shrieking. Two Marat, their hair bedecked with dark herdbane feathers, watched until Warner had been savaged and lay still upon the earth. Then one of them stepped forward with a knife in hand, and after a moment's consideration removed the steadholder's ears. He said something to his companion that drew a rough laugh, and then as the birds continued worrying the corpse, the pair of them rose and walked into the barracks Warner had been defending. The cries within garrison were joined by others, the screams of terrified children.
"Someone's going to help them," Frederick breathed. "Right? Mistress Asana, someone's going to go help, aren't they?"
Asana looked between the far courtyard and the barracks while children screamed. She came to her decision in the space of a breath. For while Tavi might be hurt, he at least had a chance of survival. If she did nothing, those children would have none. "We are," she said. "Let's go." Frederick swallowed and nodded. He shook her hand off of his shoulder and stalked forward, sweeping his spade nervously in his hand. Asana followed him. Neither of the herdbanes took note of them until Frederick swept his spade in a broad arc that ended at the neck of the larger one, which broke with a brittle snap. The bird went down immediately, while the second turned toward Frederick and lunged, snapping at the gargant herder's face. Frederick shuffled back, and the bird followed him. Inside the barracks, the children continued screaming. Asana waited until the remaining herdbane had stalked another few paces away from the door, and then she darted inside.
"Mistress Asana," Frederick called. "Wait!"
Asana slipped inside the barracks to find the two Marat facing a dozen children who hid behind several trunks and bunks knocked over and formed into a crude barricade. Some of the older children carried legion spears and thrust them viciously at the Marat whenever they came close. The Marat spoke to one another in low voices, evidently deciding how best to dig the children out from behind their barricade. Asana moved silently to the nearest Marat, reached out and touched his neck, calling to Ril as she did. The Marat jerked and let out a hoarse scream that wound down into a gurgle, as water frothed from his nose, his mouth. The second Marat spun, one hard-knuckled fist lashing out as he did. Asana felt it hit her high on the cheekbone and throw her to the ground. She tried to scramble away, but the Marat caught her by the ankle and dragged her back. She kicked at him, but the warrior slashed at her leg with his knife, a sudden line of screaming fire across her calf. She felt him move, felt his weight come down atop her, and a rough hand tangled in her hair, jerking her hair back. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the glitter of a glossy stone dagger diving toward her throat. She lifted an arm, gasping, and blocked the Marat's forearm with her own, halting the blade a scant inch from her throat. The Marat grunted and bore down, and she felt her arm forced to give way under the warrior's greater strength. Asana twisted, gasping, calling for Ril once again, hoping that the first Marat would remain incapacitated when she called Ril from him. Her fury came flowing into her, and Asana drew Ril in, even as she sank the nails of her free hand into the Marat's forearm. Blood welled from the tears in the pale skin, and Asana sent Ril flowing through those rents. The Marat gasped, shuddering, and the power of his arms began to wane. He jerked and twisted and abruptly released both Asana and the knife. His body bucked, and he fell back from Isana, back arched into a bow, clutching at his chest. Isana shuddered and tried to shield herself from the sudden terror and panic.